Welcome to the Fastcast. I'm Slowpoke number one, John Nicolaitis.
I'm Slowpoke number two, David Chalante.
Yeah, and here we are with all the fast news that's up to date and relevant.
Yep, that's what we do. It's different from our other one that's slow and not relevant.
Yes, this one is actually technically it's kind of slow because we do it over two. Oh, anyway, it's fine.
So, John.
Yes.
What do you want to talk about this week?
What do I want to talk about? I want to talk about so many things, but the first thing I want to talk about, that I'm bursting at the seams to talk about, is how are you, David?
I'm pretty good. Got a job.
Yay!
That's finally great. Got a job. Can't talk about it, so don't ask.
See, after I left my life of spydom, David has now joined another elusive organization, which he must not discuss. And we'll
look, I'm not gonna confirm or deny anything, but I will say this. Someone left. There was a power vacuum, and now that vacuum is filled. Let's just leave it there.
Yeah, seeing as I was retired.
no, but yeah, honestly, really good. It's nice to have money again.
Yes, yes. Having money is good. Being employed is good.
Yeah, I followed my typical ritual where I waste my first paycheck of a new job, bought a bunch of computer parts, and have a lot of tinkering to do. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's great. I love buying computer components and assembling things and fixing things and replacing things.
Honestly, there were a couple of things that definitely needed upgrading. I've had a couple of troubling slowdowns on my PC recently, and it's not consistent, and it's almost certainly not because of the drives. It was just like, I think it's a one-off weird boot, but the drives in my machine are 8 years old, and on no fewer than three occasions, they have been essentially immersed in water.
That's amazing that they survived that at all.
Like, it's one of these things where I think back on it, just like, how? Why did I even risk turning them back on again at the time? But a couple of water cooling mishaps when I was still a novice, because that's how long I've had them. Like, for me to be a water cooling novice during these drives' lifetime.
Yeah, I can see you plugging them in while your face is unprotected and over the exposed drives. Like, shrapnel could explode.
I left them to dry for a couple of days. I'm not a fool. But yeah, honestly, they've been very, very well-performing and everything. But it's gotten to the point now where I'm realizing, look, it is so far beyond risky to have these be the primary drives in my PC. These are going to be great as just, like, media storage, backup, whatever.
Yep.
But get some modern drives with SATA 3. Come on, David. Have some self-respect. Oh,
get some real protocols up in this biz.
I mean, SATA 2 was depreciated in, like, 2011. So, let's just get a little thing up to date. But it's good. It's good to, like, actually do some stuff that's kind of essential as far as PC maintenance goes, and then also some little extra fun stuff on the side.
That's great.
Yeah. How about you, John? How's your Fortnite been?
This is a weird way to link this, but I bought one of those Sonos wireless speaker things so I could play music in my house.
Yeah.
And then after setting it up, I started hearing it properly, and I got out my old guitar and I started fiddling around, and it started getting me into playing instruments again.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I wasn't thinking about it.
So, really good for delaying Alzheimer's and stuff like that.
That's what a lot of people have said.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It is the thing that people say.
Isn't it? Yeah. And as someone who has Alzheimer age grandparents, that fact is also relevant to
me. Yeah, no, I am at the point now where I might be starting to have Alzheimer age parents. Yeah. So, Yeah.
So I'm like, gonna get on the instrument train, gonna do it now so I can get into the habit. Yeah, apart from that, I'm also excited to go back to donating plasma again.
Oh, yeah. See, I having started a new full-time, I used to donate every second Thursday plasma. Yeah. Now that I work a 9-to-5, got to figure that out.
Yeah.
Figure out that one again.
I'm really lucky. The place nearby me, you can donate on a Sunday. So actually, tomorrow as we record this, or yesterday if you listen as we release, I will be sitting in a chair donating blood. I actually couldn't donate for a while because of some of my personal life choices.
I had to say
no on that list, which is unfortunate and a whole other issue.
Yeah, we won't get into that, but I will say this. If you guys know what we're talking about, there are also people who work in the industry who think that's bullshit too. So don't rag too hard on your average Red Cross nurse.
The point I want to raise is I now can, and so I will.
Yep.
And I would encourage anyone who's in that position to do the same. So like with vaccines, we can cover as much as we can. It's unfortunate that some people can't donate, but those who can, we still can do that. So.
Yeah, no, it's just a good way to help the community out.
Yeah.
Australian blood is some of the safest in the world. That's not just a thing people say. There is real work that is done to make it so.
Yep.
So it's very, very low risk if you are one of the people in that group. So
yeah,
be like John, be like me, be like the many, many other Australians who do the good stuff.
Maybe we should start some sort of Slowpoke's group for donating blood or something like that. Because I know they have those community groups where you can local that, work and things
that,
like that.
That's a weird thing. Most people have like, you know, little gaming groups or whatever. We would have a blood pact. Yeah. So I think that is a little bit off brand.
No, that sounds so good. The Slowpoke's blood pact. Join the blood pact. Donate your blood to your local center.
Also play video games late.
Yes. Maybe we can do some sort of land / blood donation thing. Anyway, let us know if you think that's a great idea.
So you mentioned near the start of the show that we do a fortnightly show, so things are a little bit slow.
Yeah.
This next piece of news is something that everybody has already gotten very angry about, and I think that there's going to be a kind of a unifying anger on this, and this is the whole fucking situation with Star Wars Battlefront 2 and microtransactions.
You say it's slow, and that's true. It's because it's happened over the whole of the last fortnight.
Yeah.
And what that means is we can now look at that whole picture from the very beginning of EA. And Battlefront 2.
My understanding of this is not 100%. Like, I sort of got a new job this week and my mind has been in other places. But for the basic rundown of what I understand has happened here is Battlefront 2 is going to have microtransactions in it. They had a press review event and they turned the scale of microtransactions down so that, like, late game content was much easier to get in the press version that people play.
Which is fucked.
That is despicable.
Yeah, let's acknowledge that right now. That's messed up.
A few days later, they revealed what the actual numbers were going to be, and it was ludicrous. The numbers that we've heard is that, like, characters that you would consider core characters in the first game.
I don't want to spoil anyone's Star Wars experience, but Darth Vader
and Luke Skywalker, which were, like, starter characters in the first one, now are both locked by individual 40-hour play walls.
So right? I don't understand how this works in Battlefield 2. Right. Yep. In this game, I do not understand how the hero mechanic works. Because in previous Battlefield games, anyone could lock any of these characters whenever they walked over a pickup.
Yeah.
Or like, if they were the first one to put their hand up, right? Mm. They were never gated. Anyone could play them if they were lucky enough to get them.
Yeah. Whereas now in this one, these two characters that used to be quite core and quite easy and get up with pickups are behind 40-hour paywalls. There was a Reddit post related to this in some way. It is literally the most downvoted Reddit post in the history of Reddit.
Yep.
There is something empowering about that, but also something extremely disappointing because it says what kind of community Reddit is.
And their focus.
Yeah, and their focus. And look, there's lots of great subreddits and there's lots of great communities on Reddit that are, you know, super progressive and everything. But hearing this, that the most downvoted one was a kind of shitty video game practice, kind of shows why I spend relatively little time on Reddit.
Sure.
They had an AMA where EA was not the ones who ran that. They kind of threw dice. They threw dice up to get eviscerated over that.
Ooh, poor boys.
According to the Podquisition, Laura Dale said, quote, "Someone did the maths and found out if you want to unlock every gun, every character, and fully upgrade it." At the time she was reporting this, yeah.
Yeah, because it's changed by now.
Yeah, but fuck them, they don't get to hide from this.
Yeah.
It would require either 4,528 hours of play or $2,100 American in real life money.
No one would even play a game for that long. Like, I've seen people, I've personally played 300 hours of Fallout New Vegas, right? For example, I've played 300 hours of that game.
Yeah, the game I've spent the most time in is Kerbal Space Program. That's about 400.
Right? Mm. That is 10 times that to get to this level. And admittedly,
I got Kerbal Space Program in early access. I got it before it was released. That many years.
I understand that things unlock in play, and then there's things you focus on that you enjoy more, right?
Yeah.
But I don't know the total time.
The thing that complicates this, it isn't just that it takes so long to play. The thing is that you can buy it instantly. That's what undermines every argument. The Reddit post that they made, the most downvoted one, one of the arguments they made in it about the 40-hour unlock time is they wanted people to feel a sense of pride and prestige in having achieved these characters. Yeah. But you can just pay money for them. Like, it's all just fucking lies.
Yeah.
So what happens next?
Oh, or it's the worst kind of pride. It's the kind of pride when you own a Lamborghini because no one else does.
Yeah, it's right? The shitty kind of pride. So the next thing that happens, and the timeline, this is where it gets a little bit messier for me because I'm not as across it. Yeah. Disney sees everything blowing up. Yeah. There's a bunch of different political organizations or political people talking about this. Belgium is talking about how, not specifically this issue, but they've been looking into the fact that when you put down real money for an uncertain result, it is gambling.
Yeah.
And they have been investigating this for a couple of months now and what they should do about it. Loot boxes in general. A particular Belgian politician has come out and specifically specifically criticized Star Wars Battlefront 2 and EA. John, you had a couple of things more locally.
Yeah, I did have some Australian organizations. These are all taken from Kotaku, who have had done write-ups about these. So thank you, Kotaku.
It's Kotaku AU, is it?
Yeah, Kotaku AU. Okay. And we'll include the links as well, because they should get the... So the Victorian Commission for Gambling and Liquor Regulations, which is a mouthful. So someone who was studying wrote into them. Our government agent responded with, your research and suppositions on the matter are correct. What occurs with loot boxes does constitute gambling by the definition of the Victorian legislation. Unfortunately, the complexity arises in jurisdiction and our powers to investigate. So that's the Victorian Gaming Commission going, yeah, by our definition, loot boxes are gambling. They're just offshore.
Yeah.
Just offshore gambling.
This argument has always been incredibly frustrating to me, because it so obviously is predatory and it so obviously is gambling, and the defenses are always driven by enthusiasm for the product as a whole, not specifically the loot, the issue that we're discussing. So people will defend loot boxes because Overwatch is a good game, not because loot boxes are morally acceptable.
And it always
comes down to shitty hair-splitting arguments. Like, it's only legislatively gambling if the money being put down has a real monetary reward, because the reward is in digital currency or because the reward is in a digital cosmetic skin. That doesn't constitute gambling and shouldn't be subject to the same... That's fuck off. That's fucking bullshit. That's still manipulating human beings and children into spending money based on chance.
Also, as I just said, it's gambling. It is literally...
It is literally gambling. Fuck right off.
Also, another thing that I think is fair to bring up now, gambling in Australia is... Gambling's a problem.
Yeah.
Right? And not only that, but sports betting is something that's really come up a lot in Australia.
Have you seen those recent ads for, I think it's called Ned's?
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that
one. Okay, I'm gonna complain about this for a second.
No, it's related.
So these ads, right? Every single one of these online betting ads, or even like, you know, the more bet at the counter, more sort of official
tab
and all that kind of thing, they always finish with that line, gamble responsibly.
Yeah.
Right? This series of ads from Ned's are all focusing, and I think it's Ned's, but it's one of these, download the app on your phone and bet.
Gamble live!
Yeah, what? Gamble live. Like, they're trying to get as few barriers between you giving away money as possible. They literally have you carrying around their app in their pocket. So already super exploitative. So they have these ads where you have a bunch of characters doing irresponsible, larrikin-y, kind of laddish
blue Australian things.
Yeah, it's like beer commercial dad. You know, they're doing irresponsible, lazy, disrespectful, slack-offish crap. Like shitty behavior.
Yeah.
The kind of stuff you would see in something like The Hangover, right? But they champion it as like, yeah, these Aussie guys,
boys.
And so there's one where there's like a group of workmen on a site. The woman who's paying them, and of course it's a woman, who's paying them, is like, why is no progress being made? And, Davo's waiting on Jimmy to do the roof, and Jimmy's waiting on Bazza to do the scaffolding, but Bazza's waiting on Dave to do the wall so he can do the scaffold. And it's just like, it's this loop of them just clearly slacking off and doing nothing. And then she walks away frustrated, and they're all like, yeah, lads, let's get back to betting on Ned's. And they're all ads like that.
They're ads like,
you know, dudes finding really weak excuses to not take care of their kids and shit like that. And then they finish it with gamble responsibly. But they're not targeting people who take responsibility seriously. They are targeting and championing this kind of behavior in these ads where people who take pride in their lack of responsibility and their lack of, like, adult responsible behavior.
They just found a loophole to the phrase gamble responsibly.
Exactly. They're targeting the kinds of people who would never listen to that phrase. And it's so disgusting. It's like performance art.
Yeah.
If you were to make a skit on a show like SNL, it would look like this ad. And it's fucking infuriating that, like, I watch this ad, and not only am I watching a bunch of fuckwits being all like, yeah, Bazza, let's do it. Let's fucking fuck off and do our fucking lad bits. It's fucking sick blokes. Am I right? Oh, uni lad. It's the best.
Okay. That's enough of that.
Not only do I have to see that and listen to people talk like that and watch people behave that way in an ad, which I'd find grating enough on its own, I have to also recognize how absolutely predatory and manipulative that construction of that character is. It's so fucked. And we sit here and we let people say shit that is so obviously untrue.
Yeah.
We let people say stuff like, oh, it's not really gambling and people should spend what they want and the open market should support what, and it's psychological warfare that is being used to manipulate people to part with their money. It is so thoroughly unethical.
I think gambling is one of those perfect examples of how a free open market doesn't work for something.
Yeah.
I feel like at some point, gambling might become the tobacco of the future.
Mm.
It's something, as a society, we've all gone, that's kind of a bad thing.
But for whatever reason, we haven't figured out how to get rid of it yet.
Yeah. It's just like, this is bad. Even the people who do it know it's bad. It really doesn't facilitate anyone unless you do it with your, like, unless the only time that I could sit down here and to tell you that gambling is okay is if you do it with some friends for a laugh. And even then, you can't even say with certainty that that's okay with every group of people.
No,
because
definitely
some
not.
Group of people, if you put $5 down for a poker game, which is legal in this country, by the way, right? If you put $5 down to get into a poker game, some people would hate that and it would ruin it for them, right? Mm. You can't even say equivalently that gambling is always fine
this
in that situation.
This is tangential, but like in Australia, Crown Casino is the only officially licensed casino in the entire, at least state.
Let's have an Australian Aussie law diversion.
Yeah.
Because unlike some countries, like the US, for example, that has states with many casinos, we have casino licensing locked down to particular organizations.
Yeah.
And in the beautiful state of Victoria, gambling is restricted to, as far as I'm aware, Crown Casino.
It is as close as to a monopoly as I've ever seen legally permitted.
The only exclusion to that is pokies, which are slot machines, which are allowed to be in RSLs for some fucked up reason.
And it's like, I think that it is important as well. When we talk about things like casinos and gambling, in America, it is, you know, that whole means to an end argument, because there are many disenfranchised Native American communities who are supported by community-run casinos, right?
Sure.
That is a thing that actually happens. And so I want to make it clear that in this country, our casinos and our gambling has no noble element to it. It is literally just a way to get people who have money more money.
Yeah.
Right? It's very tiny number of people. And it all just comes back. And I think that that's a really big part of it that, you know, you were talking about if you have a bet with a friend,
yep.
You and I, we decide, hey, you and I are going to play poker. The winner pays for dinner.
Yeah.
You and I are going to have a bet on this soccer game that we're watching on the TV.
Bet on the whether John can do the intro properly.
Yeah, something like that. God, the odds on that are going to be very good in my favor. But the point in those situations is that it is, what am I trying to say here?
Two participating people.
On equal footing, right?
Yeah.
Because when you have gambling in a casino, the odds, it's not rigged, right? But the odds are scaled and set so that the casino will be making a guaranteed profit.
Yeah. It's not rigged in that they will always win. It's rigged to return them consistent in, like, returns.
Yes.
Like, which when is almost just as bad.
If I make a bet with you and the odds are 50-50, right? I will double my money if I win. If I make a bet with Tab, right, and the odds are 50-50, I will slightly less than double my money if I win.
The obvious example is a roulette table.
Yeah.
Right? That has 50 numbers on it, from my understanding, right? And zero.
Yeah.
Right? Which makes it 51 numbers, which completely breaks the 50-50 if you bet on black.
Right.
Or red, for example.
Yeah, but so the odds are always just slightly against you.
Yeah.
And when it comes to loot boxes and when it comes to these kind of practices in gaming, the odds are always slightly against you because they're constructed that way to make things as profitable as possible
can't be rare unless they deny thousands and thousands of people it.
Yeah.
Right? If it wasn't denied to thousands and thousands of people, it wouldn't be rare.
What I think is very important to talk about this as well, there is another point in this story that we haven't gotten to yet. Disney have found out about how all of these people were criticizing EA and talking about regulation. Disney has provided the Star Wars license to EA, and they have entered this debate and instructed EA to stop destroying the positive image of this license. And there's a couple of things I want to talk about here. First up, Disney bought the license after the prequel trilogies.
Yeah.
Disney were like, hey, Hayden Christensen, fucking Samuel L. Jackson, George Lucas in his older years.
Hey,
all of that's fine.
Hey, you don't touch Samuel L. Jackson, all right? He's a precious gem. He can
he
be in every-
not well cast in this series of films. All of that stuff, all of the prequel shit, all the stuff that everybody hated when people thought Star Wars was ruined and irredeemable. We can make that work. Oh, EA got their hands on it? We gotta step in on that one.
Yes, it's probably because of the gambling the directed gambling. Towards all people, yeah. But also children.
So they've stepped in. EA has then massively scaled back. I'm not entirely sure if they've removed them entirely.
So from my memory, from time of recording, they have removed Microsoft and Jackson's. They just turned them off.
I don't know if it's still in discussion as to whether or not they're coming back, though. I don't know if it's a permanent removal.
But they have turned them off.
The important part of this, though, is they have said that they have made announcements to their shareholders that the removal of the microtransactions from Star Wars Battlefront 2 will not significantly impact the revenue returned on it.
And that, to me, illustrates completely how superfluous these microtransactions are to their business plans.
Yeah.
They are all profit.
Yeah.
It's all profit, baby.
That's all it is. And like part of what, another thing that happened, I think maybe slightly more than the last fortnight, Activision announced that they had the first year's profits where a greater share of their, where more of their profits were from microtransactions.
Oh, gross.
Than from retail game sales, or at the very least digital game sales.
Wow.
And so, like, we are in a point now, like, we talk a lot about the year of the loot box, and for someone like me, who doesn't play a lot of games that involve microtransactions, I hear that, and I think, you know, that's kind of, come on, let's calm down a little bit. This microtransactions have been a thing for a long time, blah, 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 blah. But then you see this tipping point that's been predicted by some people, but a lot of others who've dismissed out of hand. We've reached it now. Yep. This is it. And we are at the point now where, I mean, we live in a country where there's government and legal regulation of media already. That's not a big deal for us. But for America, where for whatever fucking reason the video game industry has gotten away with self-regulation for so long.
Because the government can't do any legislation because that's bad.
It's all tangential from free speech, right? Yes. So they self-regulate, and they basically have a whole bunch of lobby groups that just say things all like, yeah, don't let your 5-year-olds play GTA. Everybody play this game that's got gambling in it. 5-year-olds, great. Love it.
Don't mind. Loot boxes are great.
We are now at this point where we are looking at like massive regulation on a global scale where people are finally talking about that. My reaction is thank fucking Christ. I was never afraid of this.
Yeah.
You know, because as I said, we live in a country where our media is regulated by legislation already.
And guess what? They do change it. They added an R18 rating. It took them forever, but they did it.
There are still problems with how that rating is applied. And the point of the matter is, though, I think this kind of, when it comes to this stuff, this is no longer about, is it okay for kids to see gay sex in movies?
Yeah.
Right? This is about something significantly more immediate in terms of its danger.
Yeah.
This is about whether or not it is okay for corporations, multi-million dollar, to potentially some are billion dollar corporations.
Yeah.
We are talking about companies leveraging those resources to engage in psychological manipulation of all people, but as I've said, a subset of those people are children. Like, it is just so not okay.
And I want to raise this right now, right? There's nothing wrong with being a kid, right? Yeah. We literally all did it. Yeah. All of us were teenagers. All of us were kids. I don't want to be like we're bashing people who are younger, right? You're just young.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. As you age, you just take on new things. And that time in your life is something when you're really taking on what you see around you.
Yeah. Different people. There are people who are 14 years old who are more mature than me now and more responsible with their money than I am now. Yeah. This isn't supposed to be like a blanket dismissal.
Sure.
But when I say kids, I'm not talking about teenagers. I'm talking about like 6 and 7 year old kids. I think that all of this kind of behavior is terrible for everyone. I'm the kind of person who feels sympathy to someone who is addicted to substances, not disgust.
I would join you with that statement, by the way.
When we think about addiction, it isn't just chemical all of the time. There are behavioral addictions, and those addictions are just as real as those inspired by chemicals in certain cases.
I mean, fundamentally, they are inspired by chemicals because the addiction in your head is chemical. That's how the behavior gets
set. Yeah, and that's where these psychological manipulation techniques come in because they create these loops that create you know, emotional rewards that creates a feedback loop of chemicals in your brain and blah, 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 blah. But that's not even like the science of it isn't super important.
Yeah.
The point is these techniques work.
Yeah.
They work.
That's why they make profit.
Yeah, they work. And the biggest, one of the biggest arguments of why they work is that the companies keep putting them in their fucking games.
Everywhere. Yeah. Games that have a full retail price have these in them.
Mm.
Right? Games you, like, I hate, it's like $60, like $100 games. Right? That's already, I don't know about all of you, but for some of us, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Right? And like, when we're talking about this kind of addiction, it affects everybody. It affects adults. It affects children. It affects teenagers. And even if you prescribe to the idea that, you know, adults should be able to choose what they want to do with their money, I ultimately still disagree with these practices.
Yeah.
Because they're not asking people to make reasonable choices. They're not asking people to say, hey, do you want more stuff?
Yep.
You have this option for more stuff. They are using every technique they can to trick people into doing it, to get as few barriers to between you and spending money as they possibly can. They want to create senses of urgency so that you feel compelled to spend this money. Like every sleazy tactic that you can think of, you know, including the stuff that we've talked about in that patent for Activision already, the stuff where they're pitting you against other players who have spending habits to try and encourage you to have similar spending habits to other people. It's just, it is in its most fundamental form, predatory and manipulative, and regardless of the age of the target, it is unethical and should not be fucking allowed.
Yeah, it should really be removed. I understand, like,
it should be illegal to do. Yeah. I think it should be illegal to do.
If your game can't, if you can't make money unless you do this, it's like,
how can we have an R18 rating but not make every single game that has this kind of gambling in it immediately fall into an R18 rating?
It shows you how the way gaming is a culture, this world, this corporate kind of business world is so separate and removed from a lot of the decisions that affect like us, like lawmakers and things like that. I think in Australia, there are people who are more in the know with games who are getting into politics and are getting into those positions.
Can you imagine, like, even just that? I can't believe this is the first time I've thought of it, but even just that, hey, if you have microtransactions in your game, if you have loot boxes in your game, immediate R18 rating.
Yeah.
How many games take the word morphine out of them so they can get into an M18 instead of an R?
I don't understand. I feel like it's just that, that lack of cultural, that cross-cultural communication.
Yeah.
Gaming is such a space that just doesn't want people from different places to be talking to each other, right? It wants to form this insular community, right? And that's not, I assume that you're the same. That's not a world I want to build. I don't want to build an insular community. I don't want to shut people away. I don't want to keep people at arm's length. I want to explain the good things. I want to talk about them. And if there are things that we won't talk about, we need to talk about those things most of all.
Yeah.
Right? The things you're afraid of talking about are the things that matter most, right? Because you fear them, right? And if people are afraid of talking to others about the fact that there's bloody gambling in our games, we need to talk about that. We need to address it.
Look, I love video games, and I think our community has a lot of good parts to it, but how fucking defensive some of us are. Like, just coming back to that idea, it's like, oh, you know, I don't like Overwatch, it's got loot boxes in it. Overwatch is a great game. Loot boxes, therefore, are totally fine and completely unassailable.
I love Overwatch. I think it's a great game. I want to talk about Overwatch more. The fact it has loot boxes is one of those reasons why I feel uncomfortable about that.
Yeah, it's like, we need laws to happen. It just needs to happen. Look, we spent a lot more time on that topic than I thought we would. Do you want to move on to the other political stuff and then wrap it up?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So we'll start off with my more political topic. It doesn't, you know, actually yours is more important. Let's start with yours.
All right. So I just wanted to raise, it's not, I would say it's Australia focused, but it's not. It's a human thing. It's a human rights thing. All right. Now, Australia, if you haven't heard, puts people in offshore detention centers.
Yep.
Yep. We take people who are coming to this country and we put them in camps and we keep them there. And right now,
well, I think the thing that you need to appreciate there, John, is that they're jumping the queue and there is nothing more abhorrent than someone who doesn't want to file paperwork to our sense of cultural identity. So it's completely justified to do what Hitler did to people fleeing war zones because, like, honestly, they're just jumping the queue. And if they had some respect, they'd stay in the war zones for a bit until it was their turn.
So if we're going to be continuing on our moral crusade as we have been previously, I just want to get on this bandwagon and be like, what we do in this country in Australia, the way we treat people who are trying to enter it is inhuman. I mean, the bloody-
It is. When we talk about what our country does, there are lots of problems with us and racism. And like this plebiscite, for example, that's a shitty fucking thing that we're doing.
Let's make this the full political episode. Yeah. That
when we talk about the kind of treatment that we're giving to asylum seekers and to refugees, that is atrocious on a global scale.
Yep.
Like we are worse than most nations in the world when we do that.
The United Nations calls us out on it.
Yeah.
Do you know who
we
else?
We have violated human rights. Yeah. The United Nations has declared that about our country. And I often don't engage in nationalism or national pride.
Yeah.
But it is a truth that if you ask many people from overseas what they think about us and what they think about the way we treat refugees, Australia has a reputation of being a racist country. We deserve it because we treat people this badly.
Yeah, it's disgusting. We have a history of racism in this country and of trying to keep people out and doing things to people because of what we feel is right. Like how the way we've treated Aboriginal people and children, taking them from their homes, is a mark on our history that I still feel we haven't addressed as a country.
No, we haven't. And we're starting to lose the central focus of this.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of things that we do wrong, but the one we're talking about right now is the offshore detention centers, which I think are far more accurately described as concentration camps.
Yeah.
So right now, there's been a lot of attention about that because of the treatment of the men on Manus and their removal from the center that they were in.
Yeah.
I think it's a very important time for all of us to be talking about this and urging our government to exercise even one shred of humanity regarding this issue.
And I would personally advise, and I think Dave would agree with me, to join any sort of organization local to you that's talking about this, to go out when there's a protest nearby and speak up and have yourself heard.
One of the most important things you can do is talk to your own friends and family.
Yep.
Like it can be scary to protest. It can be something that many people can't do for emotional reasons.
Yep.
But if there's nothing else that you can do, I mean, just talking to one person and saying to them, this is important and you should listen and we should do something about it.
Yeah.
It matters.
I'm pretty sure that there's a number you can call to register complaints as well. And if I've got it still, I'll put the information in the description just because
it often feels useless to do that, but people listen to those phone calls. Politicians are old. They think that online petitions are a bunch of crap. They don't give a shit how many Facebook likes a post got. If their switchboard is inundated with people saying, stop doing this, I am concerned about it, I will not vote for you unless you take a stand on this. That makes a difference. It makes a huge difference to the stance of politicians.
We can't wait 30 years for our politicians to be hip with Twitter, right?
Yeah.
Right? We can't do that. Things are happening now. So I wanted to take some time here in this episode to talk about it and just raise it so you guys are aware that it's something we just feel like you should get in touch with and we should do something. I always feel, especially with politics, right? And this show's about games. Right. But I feel like gamers as a community, we don't engage enough with the things that happen everywhere else in the world.
That's very true.
Yeah.
We as a, not just as gamers, but also our generation has sort of been raised on 90s nihilism with that idea that like, oh, there's no one right answer. Both sides have bad things to them. So the smart thing is to just be above it all and not care. And it's a problem with our community.
Yes.
And it's a problem with specifically men of our age.
Guess what? You can not care and still do the right thing, right? You can think there's no right decision, but you can still make a decision that's right.
There is always one thing that is less bad than the other things.
If it's the less bad thing, you might as well still do that. Even if all you can do is talk about the less bad thing, even that is enough.
Yeah.
Right. And I just,
there's no strength in, like you were saying, being insular and hiding from these difficult conversations.
Yeah.
What real strength is knowing what's right and trying to make a difference. And everybody, I think, knows what we should be doing here,
yeah.
but they allow themselves to double think and convince themselves out of it. Call people on their bullshit. Let's just get the right fucking thing happening.
All the time we put hurdles in front of ourselves because we think we shouldn't be doing things, but we've just got to start, right? Yeah. That's why we're talking about it here now on the show. This is our way to start doing things, our way to engage more, be more active. We hope that you would do the same.
Yeah. We made a decision very early on when we set this podcast up that we were not going to be apolitical, that we weren't going to try and squash political conversation. So if any of you know of events and you want to share them in any of the community spaces that we have, please do so. Yep. It'd be great for our listeners to start talking to one another about that. I can certainly afford to know about more demonstrations and take part in more of those. So feel free to. We'll start wrapping the podcast up here. The other small thing I wanted to talk about was the net neutrality debate is now back in focus.
Yep.
Obviously, this is a different level of immediacy to Australian listeners than the issue that John just brought up. But in America, there are discussions about, once again, removing net neutrality protections, meaning that ISPs can basically just slow down whatever content they want. If I have a streaming service, or I mean, if I'm an ISP and I have a streaming service, I can slow down Netflix to the point of not being usable. So everybody has to buy my Netflix, my version of streaming.
Or if they want access to that, to the other Netflix, they have to buy a package to get it unlocked.
They have to pay even more for their internet connection.
And the problem,
if I am an ISP and as a particular politician who's talking about legislating telecommunications, I can block all of their ads from appearing on websites.
We
need to protect net neutrality to prevent that kind of stuff. It's very important. So, and if things fall down in the US, dominoes will start falling in the rest of the world as well.
The problem, the internet's going to become one of those open carrier things, right? Where there's certain things, like crimes that happen over the internet are not blamed on the people who maintain and control the internet.
Yeah.
Right? But if they are allowed the power to control those networks and not be culpable of what flows through them, to me, that is also another problem.
Think about how Twitter, how bad Twitter is at managing its community.
Yeah.
And imagine an even more- imagine an even more, like, facelessly corporate industry controlling even more of the internet. I personally believe that the internet should be a public resource. I think everybody should just get a basic connection to the internet because they pay taxes.
It's almost at the point where, it's going to be one of those it's common rights.
Yeah.
Like water or heating. It's going to be one of those things that if you rent a house, you need to provide access to.
Yeah.
A person couldn't do
that.
How
many people do you know who don't own cars, but still have to pay taxes for road maintenance and all that kind of shit?
It's every person who pays taxes.
Like, the internet, it's one of those things, like I said, in my perfect world, everyone would get it and they would pay nothing other than their taxes to contribute to society. But, like I said, it's a much less immediate issue for our Australian listeners, but, it still matters. So,
also, if your service that you're accessing is located in America, it could definitely be affected that way.
Yeah, that's actually true.
And also, companies steal laws from each other if they like them, and I don't want our country doing the same thing.
Yeah, I can see us following in the US's footsteps.
We do have a very strong history of like this kind of nationalized internet that still kind of lingers to this day, but I wouldn't be surprised if because we as Australia have adopted a lot of metadata laws about recording and holding that information, something we've all forgotten about that still totally exists. You should be using the VPN if you don't want your metadata tracked. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Well, look, that's my final political point. This was a good one. I mean, like, sometimes I feel like I get angry about stuff that doesn't matter, but in this one, I think we got angry about stuff that does matter.
All of the stuff we got angry about mattered.
I guess we'll do our classic closing. You can find us on iTunes. Give us a review. Slowpokespodcast.com is our website. At Slowpokescast is our Twitter. And Facebook.com/Slowpokespodcast is our Facebook. You can also search for us on YouTube. We're there too. But, John, for our next episode that our lovely people will be hearing, it'll be a game-focused episode, not so much a angry at the world episode.
Listen, I just want to be clear, right? These are all important things, and I guess we just bundle them all out at once. So if you are exhausted at the end of this right now, I do apologize.
I don't apologize, but I do appreciate why you would be exhausted.
Okay, right. Phrasing. I'm sorry. Anyway, our next game and the last game for our season and for the year.
Oh, it is, isn't it?
Yes. Is Mass Effect 2.
Yay! Yes. So, Mass Effect 2, as I'm sure you guys are familiar with by now, one of my favorite games. John will be playing it for the first time, and yes, we will be talking about it.
Indeed. Hopefully it all goes well and it's not a total heat-related disaster, which yeah, it totally is, by the way.
We'll see. All right. So, look forward to that episode. Thanks for helping us finish the second season. Thank you for joining us for the Fastcast. I've been David.
I've been John.
Have a great day.